All right, you're back in the DFSR here with an NFL podcast. It's Tuesday, September 11th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We are from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com/NFL. We'll get you started on a free trial to our projection system. Fantastic week one, which we're going to get into and just talk about some of the things that happened here in a recap episode. Look ahead to week two, DFSR.com/NFL. We'll get you a free trial. It's optimal lineups from FanDuel and DraftKings, includes premium articles as well. Members only chat where we're in there answering questions basically 24/7, but specifically leading up to lineup locks around NFL and MLB, NBA when the time comes. It's all covered on the one subscription package. We think it's about the best deal you're going to get in the business. DFSR.com/NFL. Buddy, I'm riding high. It was a very good week one. I just feel great. I was feeling giddy all day Sunday because football, it's so high leverage and it's so, you can just run so great and so bad. And we talked about it last year. I felt coming out of last year, you know, we always try to look back at our system and we're going to talk a lot about projections today and try to, you know, figure out where it is we change things and where it is we stand pat on different pieces of information. But I did feel like last year, if I was to, you know, we made some mistakes and I also felt like we just ran horrible on touchdowns. And I know that's something to say for the entire season. And I felt like week one cured a lot of my anxiety around touchdowns because it felt like every guy we rostered scored. So I don't know if I'm just feeling, I don't know if I'm feeling bullish.
You know, if you zoom out for a second, right? Because think about this baseball season. And, you know, overall for the season, the system has done well. Each baseball season has literally 10 football seasons worth of games in it, right? So can you run bad for 2 weeks in baseball? Of course you can. You'd be insane to suggest that you can't. And the way you run bad in baseball tends to be home runs and, you know, bad pitcher performances by actual good pitchers. Like, those tend to be the two things that matter the most. And especially when the home runs, your guys don't hit them. But more importantly, when there's a guy who's chalk that you don't have who hits a home run, you just kind of lose. Yeah. Football has that equivalent 100%. I mean, you know, like, for instance, on FanDuel, we didn't have Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan happened to be really bad, so that helps all of our lineups. But if Chris Hogan had scored 35 points or whatever the way Michael Thomas did, all of a sudden it would have been almost impossible to win. Right. So that kind of thing can really get you from week to week. I think if you zoom out on our track record over the last 5 years as a company that we've been doing NFL, you'll see a very, very nice picture. But yeah, I don't think it's absurd to look back and be like, one of the things that went wrong was that touchdowns didn't happen to go our way. Like, that's, yeah, that can absolutely happen for a season.
By the way, speaking of baseball real quick, dailyoverlay.com, the site that tracks all the big sites' picks over the course of the year. We came in number one for pitchers this year in their, I don't know their methodology, but considering we came in number one, I'm sure their methodology is tried.
Yeah, it sounds like we're probably really good.
And absolutely perfect. We came in second for hitters. Okay, I want to talk, I wrote
second
a reaction.
For hitters? That's pretty good.
Yeah, over the course of the season. So I think that's like 2 years in a row we finished right around that spot. Okay, I want to talk and do a reactionary piece on week one. We're not going to recap all of week one. We're assuming if you're here and listening, you watch the games, or, you know, you at least caught up with all the things that happened. I think what we want to focus on here is taking information from week one and deciding what kind of stuff we change. You know, when I say change, I'm saying what we change in our system. And we're going to mostly talk about opportunity here. And then things that we take away and say, you know what, I'm not going to make that much of it because it's only 1 week. And we learn some things from 1 week and some things, if you completely overreact to, you can kind of get yourself in trouble. I want to start here on Mahomes and Tyreek Hill. And this is the one that kind of spurred me writing, well, this and the Andrew Luck, which we'll get to in a second, but this kind of spurred me writing this article on Sunday night because people were just going absolutely bananas for Pat Mahomes. He's the next coming. He was amazing. Look at this. I mean, listen to podcasts. You think the guy's like some combination of like Brett Favre and like Randall Cunningham or something like that. Like, it's just, people are going completely bananas for him. And yes, he had a good game. I have a very strong opinion about this. When you look at Patrick Mahomes' game, Tyreek Hill's game, how much do you want to be bullish on this performance? Bearish, kind of in the middle, like it didn't do anything for you? Because they clearly were guys that, you know, helped win you GPPs. And I'm not sure how much I'm changing, if anything.
Yeah, I don't think I would change too much. I mean, so, and spoiler alert, one of my points that I was going to get to today is looking at receivers in new situations this year and trying to figure out what we can make of those, because very often that is a change that we do have to make. Like, we don't want to be overreactionary to, like, you know, like, who's a good known commodity guy who just, like, did something. Let me just pull someone up here. So, like, you know, Randall Cobb or something, right? Like, Randall Cobb is in the exact same situation. Maybe he's healthy. Maybe there's some freed up opportunity. But, like, ultimately, it's same QB, same scheme. He's had basically the same role in the offense. But for guys like Tyreek Hill, we are going to want to probably look more closely at their week one performances. Now, my take, I stopped myself from reading your article because I didn't want to, you know, make it, I don't know, forced or artificial or something like that. But my take on the Holmes-Hill situation, because this was queued up on my end as well, is that, A, it's really hard sometimes to judge a quarterback performance when they just get four touchdowns like this, because frequently that keeps them off the field. It kind of makes the team play weird when they're just putting up touchdowns that quickly and that easily. So, like, for instance, I think he'll get more attempts in the future. I do think that Hill's 7-for-8 performance, when put up against Mahomes' 15-for-27 performance,
yep,
leads me to believe that one of those two is not right. And I tend to believe that we won't see such efficient games from Tyreek Hill going forward, because it's very strange, because presumably a lot of the hardest throws he's going to make are going to be to Hill. So if he has difficulty on the short throws, I have a difficult time believing that he's going to be able to sustain a 87% completion rate to Tyreek Hill over the course of the season.
Well, Mahomes jumps to the now, like, in the top 10 most expensive quarterbacks after week one on FanDuel.
Oh, yeah. And that's ridiculous.
And it is, and I'm just hoping people play him. So this game should have and could have looked so much worse from a statistical angle for Mahomes, and the touchdowns get him there. He was incredibly inefficient, 55% completion percentage. And three of the four touchdowns, and again, this is sometimes watching a game can help you, sometimes watching a game can hurt you. Here's where watching the game, I think, helps make a decision about how bullish we can be on Mahomes. The first touchdown to Hill was a slant pass where Hill did everything, right? Like, he ran the 60 yards. That ball was meant to just be a possession. So it's going to happen with a guy like Hill, so don't get me wrong. Like, he can do it. He's about as fast as anyone in the league. The next two of the three next touchdowns were shovel passes at the five. So they're basically run pass option kind of plays, and he just happened to throw the ball, dip the ball in front of him rather than hand it off, and those end up becoming passing touchdowns. Like, those aren't passing touchdowns, those were runs. And so I get they get scored like that, and that's the scheme they're going to run. But easily, if he just hands the ball off rather than just flick it out of his hand going forward, he has now 55% two touchdowns, and people are not going nearly as crazy for, like, how great he was. Like, and even, like, you listen to, like, some of the bigger podcasts, like, they're so good. I just don't, I am, nothing about my projection for Mahomes is changing. I am actually, if anything, very concerned about how inefficient he was in a game where he really wasn't under tons of pressure the whole time. I don't know. I'm hoping people play him in cash. That would be insane to me if they did. I get they have a decent matchup against Pittsburgh, and he does run a little bit. The Hill piece, the only reason I'm, like, not as bearish on Hill is because I do think that is going to continue to be their plan, and I agree with you that there's just simply no way he can be as efficient. One of his touchdowns was on a punt return as well. That's going to happen every once in a while and just not be something that you can really bank on week to week. So this is the thing. I think people are going to go nuts in terms of ownership on these two guys, and I would almost guarantee that I do not play. I'm not going to change anything about the projections at all. I think we were right on with, like, where we were in terms of opportunity. And if anything, I'm a little concerned about Mahomes. Anyway, so sounds like we sort of agree there. Now,
well, I got one more note on Hill too. Yep. The eight targets isn't going to look like a lot compared to a lot of the other guys that you saw this week. I mean, we saw so many guys get double-digit targets. It was actually, yes, I think you said to me before the podcast started, we got 24 guys with double-digit targets in week one here. And that's just simply through the roof.
Last year, week one, it was something like 15 guys at double digit. I did the math last night, crazy, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was a big time number more this year than last year.
Right. So when you look at Hill tied for 33rd in targets, you might not be too excited. But again, I think the attempts will come up if they don't break off as many big plays. So I think you'll see Hill settle in, you know, in that top 20 group. So I don't know. Hill's a mixed bag for me. I think he'll be overowned for big tournaments. As well, I don't think he's probably cash game viable, and I agree that Mahomes is an absurd cash game play until we see more consistency out of the completion percentage.
One more quarterback, and then I'll get your opinion, you know, if you want to have any quarterbacks that stood out to you. Another guy I wrote about was Andrew Luck. Luck was a guy our system was very bullish on going to this game and the season, and with concerns, obviously, about the shoulder. He threw a lot of passes. He was very accurate, completed like 75% of his passes. And I looked at NFL's next gen stats about, you know, how far he was throwing. He had the second lowest attempted air yards of any quarterback in week one. The lowest was Alex Smith, which is pretty predictable. That guy's like on lock, doesn't throw the ball more than 10 yards every single year. So like that would have been the easy bet for him to be the worst. The fact that Luck did not throw over the top at all, really at all, the entire game, the one long touchdown that Ebron gets there, everything else was under. I have pretty significant concerns about what that could mean for his shoulder. Now, Chris Durello, our other NFL writer, seemed to disagree with me. He thought that the Bengals like just covered over the top so much that he wasn't able to throw deep. I can't X's and O's enough to understand that, so I'm not going to pretend to. He did disagree. Well, I do want to throw out there, he did disagree with me, and he made what I believe to be a decent case. How concerned are you, though, knowing he was not throwing the ball downfield just by the stats say he was not throwing the ball downfield really at all, and there was talk about him having just lost some velocity on his throws because of the shoulder, and again, we're just a year having played with a throwing shoulder. Are you concerned? Is that a stat that concerns you, or am I just reading tea leaves on this too much?
Well, it certainly concerns me for T.Y. Hilton, because you know that's where Hilton's going to make most of his bank, is those downfield throws. And if Luck isn't going to make them, then we'll see Hilton's value go down. I think as far as Luck goes, like, I mean, he completed 39 of 53 balls, right? So it's not he was able to pass. You don't need to throw the ball super far to be an efficient passer. And their general lack of a run game with like kind of the injury situation there, I think leads me to believe that he's probably still just a fine play, but you just don't want to expect those 80-yard touchdowns. And, you know, let's face it, for big tournaments, you often need passes like that in order to really get there and come in first place. And so, yeah, I think it's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. I think the very, very positive thing here is that they let him throw the ball that many times, because I think if they had any concern about the shoulder in terms of its health, you know, say whatever you will about its strength, but about its health, that he'll still be heavily involved in the offense. So I think I'm maybe between the two. Like, I wouldn't, like you, I don't want to speculate that he'll start throwing the ball farther. I think we can assume, I think the safest thing to assume is that he probably will at least do it less than he used to, and you still might have a perfectly viable fantasy quarterback in there.
Yep. Okay. Any other quarterbacks? Because I do want to actually spend a little more time on running backs and receivers. Or any other quarterback situations that stood out to you that make you want to be like change anything or adjust something based on what you maybe saw in the games or based on some of the statistics? I mean, Rodgers gets hurt. We're gonna have to kind of wait. He came back, obviously, and was put on just like a crazy epic performance, as our friend Justin was just furiously texting us, these Bears are going to win the Super Bowl texts. Like, those texts did not age well. So, Justin, if you're listening to those, the first half to second half tone of the texts from the Bears and Packers thing was pretty remarkable. Any other quarterback things stand out to you from week one?
Yeah, I mean, so there's some guys who I would put in the kind of comeback territory. I mean, some guys never left, but it still feels like a comeback for someone like Drew Brees, let's say. You know, we played Brees on DraftKings, and the 439 yards, three touchdowns was about all that we could ask for. You know, the Saints kind of put him in a weird position the last couple of years by moving more towards the run in the red zone, but the hookup of him and Michael Thomas looks, you know, utterly legit. We also had Michael Thomas on FanDuel and DraftKings, so that wound up working out. That's a spoiler alert there. And it seemed like, you know, with bringing Kamara in as the definitive number one back, they're still going to be using him a ton in the passing game. And, you know, he's basically a wide receiver one mixed with a running back one. And
yeah, I would maybe disagree. I was actually going to get, this is one of the running back guys I want to talk about. So actually, let's just bring it up now. Kamara only carried the ball 8 times. Now, again, they got game scripted weirdly here because the Bucs just kept their foot on the gas and were just basically winning the entire game. So the New Orleans was in catch-up mode the entire time. So Kamara is actually pretty high on my list of guys to question about. We went into week one being like just with his touches just being through the roof. Now, the targets were there, 12, and the goal line carries were there, so that was good, too. Like, he was getting the ball down and close when they were in the red zone. Are the 8 carries more indicative of just the pace of the game because they just were forced to play catch-up the entire time? I mean, Gillisley and Jonathan Williams did come in and carry the ball a little bit, like four or five times total between the two of them. How concerned are you with the Kamara's volume here, or do you think that it was just the game got away from them and they just had to just keep the ball moving downfield in order to try to play catch-up?
Yeah, I'm not concerned about his volume personally, simply because while Gillisley and Williams touched the ball, they did so 4 total times and were just terrible. Like, Williams,
yeah, Gillisley fumbled. I was so happy. Like, well,
that's what
I'm
saying.
Like, he fumbled early. Yeah.
So he had a fumble. Williams had 1 carry for no yards. They did absolutely nothing. I mean, the Saints just had difficulty running the ball. I think that's also a reason why they pivoted off. But I still think you'll see. What I took from this is that the plan is that Kamara is the 3 down back and no one else did anything to change that plan, and that now I know as well that when the going is tough for the Saints, that he'll still probably be in line for double-digit targets out of the backfield, and that just gives him you know, because things just go wrong for every running back at some point. That's like why you don't see anyone average 100 yards a game last season. Like right. sometimes the game script just simply doesn't go in your favor and then you're forced to adjust. And the fact that even when the game script couldn't have really been less in his favor, especially in the second half, he still was out there being a huge part of the offense. So, yeah, I think it's a double takeaway. I loved Breeze after week one. That's nothing new, but I like Kamara too. A couple of the other guys I wanted to get your feedback on, because they're going to be hot topics. I mean, you're going to win $1 million if you play Ryan Fitzpatrick in week one. He and Mike Evans was another guy on my list about, you know, just a surprisingly efficient game that we haven't seen from him in quite a long time. He was 7 for 7. What do we make of Fitzpatrick? I mean, he threw for 417 yards in 28 passing attempts for 4 touchdowns. Is he a legitimate big tournament target going forward? Like a cash game play? What do you think there?
I don't know. It helps to me. For me, it helps that they play the Eagles this week because the Eagles just are a good team. I mean, I guess they looked a little sketchy in week one. I don't know. Now, this is not a guy I really want to overreact to. He completed the Saints defense. You know, they were just getting completely torched on the deep ball. And I just think that is not, while it has huge upside, it is not like a repeatable thing to just, you know, just have DeSean Jackson just catching just very long touchdowns, Evans catching very long touchdowns. Like,
I don't know. Why not? They're both really good long. Could you make a case that most teams just aren't going to have the personnel to cover both of those guys deep? And then when you give up on one, you can, you know, make it back on the other?
I guess I don't disagree with you. It's just not a guy. I just didn't see the performances repeatable, and Fitzpatrick just has a long career of just being like not a bad quarterback. I don't know. He's just a guy that he, to me, it's just a guy. It was a huge week one. I don't want to go completely overboard with it. Maybe we tick up his passing yards per attempt a little bit, and that's going to be the case. And I'm not going to change. I don't believe I want to change his opportunity all that much, just because. I mean, I have him down for 35 or 36 passes with a few runs. That's a pretty bearish prediction for a projection for a guy like him. And I think I would probably not, I'm not going to take it to like, you know, 39 attempts or something like that. They still have some running backs here. I think we probably,
yeah,
again,
well, I think that's fair. So just real quick though, Fitzpatrick's history, the teams that he's been on, right? Mm-hmm. He was on the Bills from 2009 to 2012, 0 receivers. Then he had 1 stops through Tennessee, no receivers, Houston. That was like at their peak of just getting sacked 50,000 times a game. Then he goes to the Jets, no receivers, and now he comes to Tampa Bay. I still think you're probably right. I think it's probably, you know, smoke and mirrors ultimately, simply because like we did see 6 games out of him last season where he just had his almost exact career average of 6.8 yards per attempt. So it's probably nothing to get too excited about.
My thing is, it's like a lightning in the bottle game, and he's just like not bad. Like if he's a minimum price quarterback in a good matchup, that's a guy you don't feel terrible about running. Sure. I don't think. And that's basically what he was last week. And so if you were on that again, that was a guy Chris did write up as a correlation play with the Saints, and I was actually kind of kicking myself for that, because for all the Saints exposure we had between Thomas and Kamara, to not have some correlation in GPPs going back the other way on Fitzpatrick and some of the receivers struck me as. I mean, it was results-oriented, and it was a process piece where it was just a mistake to have done it, because we were so high on the Saints guys, and there are situations where Tampa Bay hangs. They clearly did in this, and to not have exposure going the other way, I was kind of kicking myself. You know, one other – I don't know if you have any other quarterbacks you want to mention. I have a couple – I have some running back situations I want to get your opinion on, but I don't know if you have – if there's any other quarterback guys that stood out to you.
No, I mean, there's a number of guys that – again, they pair up with the wide receivers that I've been looking at. Mostly these new situation guys I want to try and pin down, like Case Keenum in Denver.
Yes.
You know, he was super, super good.
I love it. That was a guy. Sanders was the guy that I wanted to talk about here.
Sanders was the other main guy on my thing, too. So we can jump into that now. I mean, my general take is Sanders, people forget now because it's been so long that he's had a reasonable quarterback situation. But he was like the hyper efficient possession guy who could also break off long passes, and you know, was too cheap in week one, wound up having really good ownership in both cash games and GPPs. And now he's got, and like I was concerned about Keenum going into week one. I'm just not sure. You know, I get a little gun shy on these young QBs with a short track record. We've just been bitten by them so many times. But 64% completion rate, 329 yards, 3 touchdowns. He did have the 3 picks, but that probably should come down with a completion rate this high. Thoughts on Keenum and Sanders? You're into it?
Yeah, well, I like Sanders going into week one in general. Like, I had him in tournaments. He was a guy actually but if you played the 4 p.m. slates for us, he was a guy just in cash games because of his price on DraftKings. The reason I like Sanders going into the year was the thing that exactly played out. Keenum threw a ton to the slot last year, and they moved Sanders into the slot basically the entire game. Like, he was an outside wide receiver last year. They moved him into the slot for like 75% of the snaps that he ran. I believe that's the number. It's something like that. It was very, very high, like much higher than what he did last year, which is something around 40%. I read this stat yesterday and I'm just didn't write it down, but it was, I know I'm very close on these numbers. And it played out. And this is exactly what happened with Adam Thielen last year with the exact situation with Keaton. He just likes to throw to guys in the slot, and it just happened, right? Like 10 of 11, incredibly efficient. And you're right. We just haven't seen even competent. Competent even a word. Below, we haven't seen below above replacement level QB play in Denver for years now, and they just have it now. So is Keenum a world beater? No. But is he good enough to get by? We saw clearly he was with the Vikings last season, going to the NFC Championship game, basically. And like, he's such a huge improvement over what they had last year. And Sanders and even Demaryius Thomas. Thomas had 10 targets. His are going to be a little more downfield oriented. So I think from a possession standpoint, you'd much rather have Sanders in cash games. And like I said, if you played our 4 o'clock slates, you just had Sanders in those games because he was butting up against cash game play, DraftKings. And he was like 500 too much on a day where you can mostly go stars and scrubs. And that was the only reason he didn't get there. So my long-winded answer is, hey, I love Sanders going into week one, and I just love it even more. He's not going to do 10 of 11 every week, but if double digit targets are going to be there, and especially if they get game scripted where they're coming from behind a little bit more, this is we could see him among the top 15 in overall targets by the season's end. I don't feel like I'm being crazy by saying
that. That doesn't seem out of hand at all. Two other quarterbacks, just super, super quick. And I mean, maybe it won't wind up being quick based on your take on it, but your pal Jimmy Garoppolo, oof, terrible week one. Yeah. 15-33, 46% completion rate. Might see if you can get a refund on the old Jimmy Garoppolo most passing.
I don't think they're going to let me. I don't think Five Dimes is going to let me out of that one. I don't think I can, like, I don't think they're going to offer me.
It was a misclick.
Yeah. Well, they're going to offer me, like, hey, do you want to buy out now? Like, I think they're like, well, that's money. They've already spent that money. But here's my thought on Garoppolo. It was a terrible game. There's no question about it. It was a very bad matchup on the road against Minnesota. It's one of the top defenses in football. Marquise Goodwin got hurt almost right away in the game, and so he was already down a receiver. I became less bullish on Garoppolo the second McKinnon went down. I wrote that article and put that bet in when they were fully healthy. When McKinnon went down, I instantly wish I could have gotten it back because I just thought it was such a knock to their offense that it was obvious that teams were now going to be just not have to focus on the running back's position really at all between Alfred Morris and Matt Breida. And so I guess what I would say is if I'd written that article 1 week later, or you know, like whenever McKinnon got hurt, I wouldn't even have done it. So that's kind of my thought on Garoppolo. And I think that he's not going to be worse than he was in week one. It's a terrible matchup. Minnesota's so good on defense, right? They have just top-rated quarterbacks.
No, you're right.
And losing Goodwin did come back, but losing Goodwin for like half the game really hurt them. So while here's the point. I'm not changing his projection at all, right, for right now. I'd already down-guided him when McKinnon got hurt, and I'm not changing it from that. Like, I'm not bringing it down even more based on this game. I think we're still probably in the range of realistic on Garoppolo because I think there was some contextual things that kind of held him back in the first game.
Yeah, I mean, and just a couple other notable, terrible players. Tyrod, new situation, dog poop. I almost cursed on the podcast for the first time. 15 out of 40. I just got so disgusted when I thought 15 out of 40.
Well, weather was a concern. Ben was bad, too. The wind made it really hard to throw there, and it's still Taylor. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Baker Mayfield in a couple weeks here. He was so inefficient. But what do you make of the Landry thing? Because Landry had a ton of targets. So
I like Landry. He's on my list. The fact that Landry converted 7 out of 15, you know, for a guy. So if you take away Landry's targets, then Tyrod all of a sudden is like 8 out of 25. Not incredible there. I like Landry going forward. I think we've seen Cleveland sustain sort of a wide receiver one when it's been a possession guy in the past. And you could see him, you know, you could see him to continue to put up numbers. A couple other, like, but I mean, spending too much time on Cleveland's probably not the super efficient use of time.
Right.
What about Deshaun Watson? He's a guy that people were dreaming on. Big comeback season. Terrible again. 17 out of 34, 176 yards. we worried about Watson? Are we? I mean, certainly you probably don't want to pay $9,000 for the guy.
Nah, New England schemed him out of anything he was going to be able to do because they basically did what we said in the game by game preview, which was to say they double covered DeAndre Hopkins the entire game.
Yep.
Will Fuller was ruled out right before the game started, so that they were already down a receiver. So now that they're running out there with a double covered DeAndre Hopkins plus like a Bruce Ellington, Ryan Griffin mashup with a running back situation that haven't liked since week three of last year in Lamar Miller, right? So like it's sure. A Watson problem for sure, and they have a big time what I would think personnel problem for him as well. Like if other teams are going to take the blueprint of just stick everyone on Hopkins and just make everyone else kill you, these guys aren't going to kill you. I mean, Patriots are really smart like right. that. If other people look at that game plan and that's going to be the MO going forward, I would be concerned about Watson, and I'm really not changing his projection because New England's very smart. There are a lot of other teams that are very dumb, and you will just see a game where he has 16 targets to Hopkins that completes, four, 13 of them or something like that for a huge game. So not a guy I'm changing. I had already brought him down a little bit because coming back, and nothing he did makes me want to bring him back up. I'm not gonna change him and lower him anymore just after that first week because I already was just a little bearish on what we could reasonably expect from him.
Cool. I mean, yeah, week one, definitely don't want to overreact too much, but I think there are definitely some notable situations to keep an eye on.
Well, I'm going to overreact to this
one. The list goes
on.
There's actually a lot of the guys that, names that you would recognize that, like Mariota is another guy, cash game questionable, 16 total attempts,
He got hurt too. Guys. Like Blaine Gabbert came in. Mariota might just be out this week. He's actually totally done now because Delanie Walker's out for the season. So they are down his number one pass catcher.
Well, yeah, Gabbert was also garbage too.
Okay, let's go in the running back. So we're going to start. We could probably talk forever here. Okay, two guys that I do want to overreact to possibly. James Conner. So James Conner led all players in usage this week. It wasn't even particularly close. Now, he did have some weather things that helped him because it was very hard to throw the ball in Cleveland during week one. But we've seen this from the Steelers before. Is like they have a running back, and that's their running back. Like nobody else plays. Like when it's Le'Veon Bell, it's Le'Veon Bell. When it was D'Angelo Williams, it was him. Now it's Conner. Like they had one other guy attempt a rush, Switzer, and that was it. Like this guy touched the ball like 40 times or something like that. I wrote in my overreaction that he was going to see a pretty sizable price increase relative to what he started out, which was at the minimum, and it was still going to be so way too cheap, assuming Bell is still out. Are you with me on this? Like, I think he's still the best running back value. I don't think it's even close for week two.
7,000 on FanDuel.
And I think people are going to be scared because this gets into people's head. He's $5,500. Look, he's so much more expensive now. Dude, this guy should be... he should be like an $8,500 running back. And we have history on this. This is not just, it's Leonard Fournette's out. What are they going to do? Chris Ivory, is he the guy? No, this is not that kind of situation.
Yeah. Well,
this
we literally saw D'Angelo Williams, who's just like...
That's what I mean.
The actual out of the NFL 1 week and then like come in and have 150-yard games.
They don't have another guy. They showed it. They're not bringing in another guy. They're not going to spell him. He's the guy. He's young. Run him into the ground. $7,000. I mean, is this like a cash game lock for me? If someone was, I guess a short of Bell. But why would you? I mean, Bell could come back right now. I'm not even sure there'd even be in a rush to bring him into the fold. Like, I don't know. And by the way, Bell's not coming back because this thing looks like it's completely broken. Am I crazy? I'm so bullish on. No. He's going to need to be the $8,000 as long as maybe even higher as long as the matchups are there. And by the way, this is a great matchup this week. I'm going to write about it in the cash games. Are you on the same page with me as Connor?
Absolutely. I think 31 rushing attempts, 6 targets through the air. That's for a $7,000 running back. It's ridiculous. He's just simply way, way, way too cheap. And I think you'll see another at least 10% price jump after this week. So you just play him this week. Everyone's going to do it. Everyone played him last week.
No, they didn't. Great. Here's the thing. You know what's crazy? They didn't play. They did. 25% of people in cash games didn't play him. 25%. That's the rake plot. That's double the rake.
But that's still basically everyone, right? I mean, going into week one, you've got so much casual money. And that casual money kind of tails off as the season goes along. I think you're going to see... I put a percentage on what you think his ownership will be at $7,000 on FanDuel. I think he'll be more than 40% on.
Oh, yeah. I think it'll be like 60%. It'll be way too low. It's just another one of these situations. The next closest guy in terms of overall touches in week one is actually the next guy on the list. So we agree on Connor. So Connor had 37 total touches between... I'm calling that rushing attempts plus targets. You have a guess who the second closest guy was?
Just out of running backs?
Yep. Oh, it's all players, but yeah, running backs, because they just touched the ball.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You're not going to guess.
I think I do actually know. Adrian Peterson.
You got it. Adrian Peterson. Yeah. 29.
Well, I saw he had 27 carries or 25 carries.
26 carries, yeah. Three targets.
What's the difference?
Do you think one... Okay, what are your thoughts on Peterson? I'm going to couch my opinion here for a second. What are your thoughts here on Peterson going into week two?
I mean, you'd love to see the usage in the offense, first of all. And for me, it's basically a price play. Like, he did absolutely nothing. I mean, not absolutely nothing. He was totally pedestrian with the touches that he did get. He's got a great matchup with Indy. Did get a goal line carry or two. I don't know. Seems like a fine play. I don't expect him to go out there and give you 190 yards and three touchdowns or whatever, but if he's less than 7,000 on FanDuel right now, that doesn't seem like a crazy stab to take.
Yeah, I don't want any part of it. Like, this guy, if you look back at his last 2 years worth of game logs, he would have good games, and the next week he just would be would totally disappear. Now, is it some of a chicken egg? Like, some of his matchup problems, like he just ran into bad defenses the next week. And maybe I'm not doing a good job of figuring out that, like, he has good quarterback play last year as opposed to what he had in Arizona. Like, I'm going to consider Alex Smith. He's a very efficient passer, and they can get the ball downfield, and they do have a matchup against Indianapolis. And the guy's just so old and has so many miles on it. Is it reasonable to expect that he can just, like, bounce back on a week-to-week basis where he just touched the ball, like, 30 times in a game? I don't know if I'm reading too much into that or not. Maybe I got burned on the Peterson thing a couple times last year, and that's sticking in my mind. And I don't know. I don't want to bring him into, like, the elite usage kind of guy, like, carry guy that, you know, for some of these other guys, even though he showed it in week one. Like, if we want to, like, we walked into week one having him at, or I'll just give the number. We had him at 11 carries, 2 targets. How much higher do we want to push that number up? It probably needs to come up a little bit, and I'm not sure I want to take it to, like, 14.
I don't think you can. I think you can easily. I think you can take him to 14. I think 11 is just simply too low. I don't know what exactly the right number is, but I think you want to take him up into, like, the 14 to 16 touch range. Just a totally new team. I think all we know about how the Washington wants to use him can be based on week one, and given that week one, they gave him the ball, or tried to give him the ball 29 times. I think you have to assume that that's a big part of their plan going forward. You know, like, again, the other thing I like to compare it against is, what about the other guys? And you did see 8 touches out of Chris Thompson and Rob Kelly, to say nothing of the 8 carries that Alex Smith had. So, yeah, Washington ran the ball just in general a lot more than they're going to run the ball normally, just because they jumped out to that huge lead over Arizona in the second quarter. So I think you probably take team attempts down. I mean, at least probably like 10-20% for the average going forward. But that still is going to leave him with, you know, do you assume that he's going to get 75% of the carries for this team, or do you not? Because if he's going to get 75% of the carries, like, he's going to get 15 carries in a game.
Yeah, and we're going to be in a weird spot here, because we talk about, you know, what running backs are in great. When you look at things going into a week, where do you want to find running backs? You want to find them as home favorites. He's a -5.5 home favorite against a Colts team that just let Mixon basically run all over him in the second half. This is going to be a tough one. I don't love it because I'm just very spooked on the age and the recovery process, and maybe that's just me speaking out of turn because I don't totally understand what's happening. The last guy that won the...
By the way, one last thing on Peterson. He did look a little bit explosive too, right? Like, his two receptions, he ran one off for 52 yards, the other one for 18 yards. Like, he's still got playmaking ability. I don't know. You're talking me into it. The more you try to make a case against him, the more I'm into playing him.
I can see that. This is the situation where I can see it. We're going to be talking about this Sunday morning, and this is going to be something hinges on, and I'm just going to feel completely awful about it, I think. And if the numbers get there, the numbers get there, and I'll go with it. But, it's Adrian Peterson. Last guy I maybe overreacted to, Christian McCaffrey. McCaffrey's stock jumped up a ton in the offseason when it looked like he was going to be sort of that bell cow kind of rusher for Carolina. That really did not materialize even in the slightest in week one, in a game where it really should have, because they got away from their plan. But if that was going to be their plan, this would have been the game where it would have happened, because they were winning early. The game was very slow paced. It looked like they were completely willing to grind it out against the Cowboys, and he finished with 10 carries. Now, the targets were still there. I was never really worried about the targets in the passing game. But Cam basically turned into their running back. He ran 13 times. C.J. Anderson came in for 7. We were maybe too bullish on McCaffrey's overall touches, specifically in the running game. I had him as a easily like a, you know, mid-teens kind of carries. Is it safe to lower him after 1 week, or do we want to kind of stay the course with what we thought was going to originally happen going into the season?
Well, we want to lower him a little bit for sure. I think, you know, for starters, we've seen Carolina do this in the past where like they'll give Cam a bunch of carries, but then they remember like, oh yeah, our whole season hinges on this guy being on the field. So mm-hmm. he just can't carry the ball 13 times a game. So, you know, you figure that Cam will give back probably at least five of those carries to the running back, but it's a full on committee right now. I mean, McCaffrey, 10 carries. And then the combination of Anderson, Moore, and Arma had 9 carries. And that is not what you want to see from a guy that you thought would be the bell cow back. You know, if he's going to get 50% of the carries, the running back carries in the future, you can't count on him for more than like 11 or 12 carries a game, I wouldn't think. And that's going to probably take him out of cash game territory for us.
Oh, yeah. The snaps are there. He was on the field a lot. You know, he played, you know, only 10 snaps, only off the field for 10 offensive snaps for off the total. So definitely there on because they lined him up at wide receiver enough. But they ran the run pass option so much with Cam that Cam just ended up keeping the ball himself to the point where if that's going to be part of their scheme, then you just can't. You just, yeah, I think we probably were a little bit. I don't think overboard because I think it was I think the process was correct on McCaffrey, and it just I saw kind of all I needed to know from week one that they're not just gonna turn and hand him ball off to him 19 times a game. It's just that's just simply not gonna right. be the plan. If like I said, if any game was gonna be the one, this was gonna be it, and they didn't do it. He fumbled inside the goal line on his first red zone touch too, so that probably didn't help his stock at all. Any other running backs that stand out to you? We're going pretty long here. That's okay. I don't know if you want to finish off with running back or and then get into some receivers. I know we did touch on some of these guys when we talked about quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, generally, I think running back, it's like a lot more straightforward and a little bit less interesting than receiver to me because running backs are going to be so game script dependent. And a lot of these guys, I mean, we talked about Peterson already, but, you know, Carlos Hyde, Lamar Miller, like guys that you saw towards the top of the carry list for week one, they're not going to be there every single week. This is my general overview here. Peyton Barber's the same way because their teams are not good enough to yes. sustain them carrying the ball that often. And so, yeah, occasionally in what we're seeing here, like the note you want to make for yourself going forward is picking out weeks in the future where these running backs are favored. Like this is why I think I do like Adrian Peterson for next week. Figure that they're going to get those carries those weeks, and they're going to give it back in the weeks where they just fall down 2 touchdowns to New England and, you know, never going to hand the ball a single time. So that's my general overview. I think a few of the one-off ones, Saquon Barkley got utterly bailed out by a 68-yard touchdown. He was just completely bad on every other one of his carries for the entire game. So that's going to happen sometimes to young running backs. But minus the 68-yard run, the other 17 carries were for 38 yards. Mm-hmm. Really, really bad. And then after that, it's just everything just looks kind of game script dependent to me. And, you know, no huge takeaways that I'm sitting with right now.
I'd be really my last final thought on running back. I'd be very concerned if I was a David Johnson owner in fantasy going forward because that team looked just about as bad as a team can look for yeah. 1 week. Again, I don't want to completely overreact, but it's not like they have the personnel. It's like the Saints lose week one. You're like, oh man, Saints are screwed right now. They still have all those guys. Those guys still kind of went balls to the wall. David Johnson, Stan Bradford looked even worse than I think any reasonable person could have expected he look. Larry Fitzgerald just looked like he was just gonna have his head taken off across the middle a couple times. They couldn't even get the ball to Johnson. The team is so bad that I'd be worried about his volume just on that standpoint. Like they're just not going to be in a situation where they can hand the ball to him a ton. They didn't line him up as a wide receiver enough. So David Johnson's a guy that I'm guiding down a little bit because it's going to be, I don't know what's going to need to go right for them. Now they get lucky too. They're huge underdogs to the Rams this week. So we get lucky in probably not having to make the decision, on him, but I'd be very, very concerned if I was owning him in fantasy, going forward, because there's almost no chance he's going to end up anywhere close to where he ended up 2 seasons ago. Any wide receiver thoughts? Like I said, we did touch on a lot of these guys when we talked about quarterback.
Yeah, as we're going through, I mean, the big thing I'm keeping an eye on, as always, is wide receivers in these new situations. So, you know, looking at Sanders, looking at Mike Evans, we already talked about Jarvis Landry. Two guys that we didn't go too deep on. Well, one is Larry Fitzgerald. It was reassuring to me to see him get 10 targets for 7, or 7 catches on 10 targets for 76 yards. Seems like he'll be, you know, a reliable source of targets going forward one way or the other. And that's, you know, unsurprising. He seems like kind of the quintessential guy that Sam Bradford would want to hook up with. So I do like that situation going forward. Curious to know what you think about the Ravens situation, because, you know, we were like, that was one of the teams that we talked about in our intro to this week, where we were basically like, you know, somebody's got to get all these new targets. And then, of course, what happened was everybody got all the targets.
Well, they were winning. Like, so here's the thing. So this is, so that's a good one to bring up. And maybe we'll just end it on this, and then we'll get into some of the more of the, I'm realizing we can get a lot more into this when we do a game by game breakdown at the end of the week, where we just kind of look at every team and talk in their situation. Some of these, sure, those thoughts are going to overlap here. You cannot take anything away from that Ravens game. They were winning by so much early on that they just didn't, they basically just were able to bring in the B team. They didn't need to do anything, right? Like, they were just crushing Buffalo to the point where it was like, let's get the starters kind of out of here. Like,
yeah, it was 26-0 in halftime.
That's what I mean. Like, Lamar Jackson Nathan was getting
Peterman
throws.
Nathan Peterman and company weren't really inspiring any great confidence.
They didn't need the throw. Like, Lamar, like I said, they brought in Lamar Jackson just to lend some of those packages to kind of see what they had.
They now, still did throw, right? I mean, Flacco still had 34 attempts. That's not nothing.
Yeah, it's not nothing. And I'm just like not making much of the game. The game was just so out of hand that I don't know what you can make. One thing you can make something of is that Kenneth Dixon did get hurt, and I think he might be out for the season. So that actually cuts down their running back. Because Alex Collins, I mean, hilariously, the team wins by 40. Collins is the guy I really liked in GPP. The guy, I mean, luckily got a touchdown. Otherwise, that game was, he was looking at like less than 2 fantasy points if he doesn't scamper that one touchdown in for a game. If you know, if your team's going to win by 40, and completely shut out the other team, it's like you just lock in the starting running back usually, and that really didn't end up being the case for Collins.
Yeah, he had the fourth most running yards on the team.
That's what I mean. I mean, hilarious. The Bills, my goodness, to be a Bills fan, it just couldn't be worse. But it does help him that Dixon's going to be out, and I just don't think we could take a single thing away from that first game. It was so out of the realm of what's going to happen to them on a week-to-week basis. I'm not changing a single thing except for getting Dixon out of there and really not redistributing it all that much. And I'm going to take a wait-and-see approach on it going forward. All right, we're going to be back on Thursday talking some cash game plays, which we're going to get into writing this morning. And then we'll be up Thursday. And then Friday we'll be around for the game-by-game breakdown where we kind of take a re-look at some of these situations. News always crops up over the course of the week, injuries and whatnot that do change our opinions going forward. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com/NFL. We'll get you started on that free 3-day trial, so please go check that out. Free, I think it's still free for 7 days right now, which will carry you through week 2.
In celebration, we are extending that through only today.
Only today,
and then as of tomorrow morning, when you wake up, you will see, unfortunately, that it will go back to being a shorter trial. I don't know exactly how short yet, but 3 or 4 days.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
DFSR.com/NFL will get you started, so go check that out. Don't sleep late on that free offer. Okay, buddy, we'll talk to you again on Thursday. Don't talk to you again Thursday when we talk some cash game plays for week 2.
All right, man.